This is Jennifer Denlinger. How are you today?
Hi, Rocky. I'm doing well.
Good. We are family support coordinators at Prevention Resources, an agency based in Flemington since 1971. Jennifer and I work in the Family Support Center and provide support to anyone in Hunterdon, Somerset, or Mercer counties who have a loved one with a substance use disorder. We meet with families one-on-one, in person, or via phone, email, or text. We literally meet people where they're at, right?
We literally meet people where they're at.
All our services are free. You can contact us 908-782-3909. Our show is weekly on Thursdays from 5 to 6 o'clock. We broadcast live on Facebook on our page, Sharing the Hope. The shows will be posted so you can listen at your convenience. We welcome your comments and your suggestions for future guests and topics. So we are fortunate today. Number one, I want to acknowledge that we are in the midst of Recovery Month.
Yes.
Yes.
September.
We were just chatting about how many events are going on, which is very exciting. One thing I noticed today that some of the advocates started is when you go on Google, it says something about Recovery Month.
Oh, really?
Yeah. And when you, it's just going to happen today, but there's millions and millions of people who go on Google. Mm-hmm. And then when you click on that, it directs you to all kinds of resources and success stories.
That is fabulous.
Yeah. And it's all as a result of advocates. Speaking of advocates, we're very, very fortunate to have as our guest today Dan Mira, who currently does marketing and outreach for High Point, Partial Care, and IOP right here in Flemington. For much of his career, Dan worked as a writer and editor who has focused on addiction issues. He was the longtime editor of Perspectives, NCAD, New Jersey's Journal on Addiction Policy and Treatment Issues. NCAD is the National Council on Alcohol and Drug Dependence. His writing and editorial work was recognized by the New Jersey Association of Mental Health and Addiction Agencies with the Truth in News Award. What a concept, Dan. His opinion articles on addiction, recovery, and behavioral health issues have regularly appeared in New Jersey's major newspapers, including the Star Ledger, the Asbury Park Press, and the Times of Trenton. Welcome, Dan.
Thank you very much. It is very good to be here. Good to see both of you.
Great to have you here.
Rocky and I have a good history together.
We do.
We'll talk about that later on, I think.
Absolutely. But first, let's start with where you are currently, Dan. You're with High Point right here in Flemington.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm wondering if you could tell us a little bit about High Point, their treatment services, and the clients that you see.
Yeah, I'd be happy to do that. I'm very fortunate to work for High Point, which, of course, it is a very fine program, and that sort of starts at the top with our program director, who is Anna Vitale. She is, I was just talking with someone about this who was a colleague of hers, and she's very busy. We are a busy program, pretty full, mental health and addiction, partial care, IOP, and outpatient treatment, sort of a continuum of care.
I'm just going to interrupt you for a second. Could you explain what partial care is and IOP?
Partial care would be the fullest level of care. It would be an all-day program starting at about 9:20 in the morning, starting in with groups and continuing throughout the day till about 3:40 is when the last group ends. A lot of our clients are Medicaid individuals. So they come to it. We provide transportation to many of them. Then IOP would be a step down from that to a half day of care. And then taking the next step in the continuum would be just outpatient care before discharge.
Right. So IOP is
intensive outpatient.
Right.
Yes.
So just for our listeners,
we fall into the trap, and I was about using acronyms too liberally and ones that we know in our sleep, but
right, yeah. Exactly. Thank you for that.
Needs to be
so
spelled out.
So you have a history in the world of recovery, and you've seen a lot of changes. What have you witnessed in treatment that has changed a little bit about what progress has been made?
So I definitely, some of these things aren't brand new, but the The advancements around harm reduction, I think, are fantastic. And, you know, medication-assisted treatment is an important aspect of treatment. It's something that we offer at High Point for people with a substance issue, either Vivitrol, an injection, or Suboxone. This would be mainly for people with an opiate addiction.
Right. So medically-assisted treatment would fall under, perhaps, harm reduction. And Rocky and I were just at a workshop earlier this month about harm reduction. Mm-hmm. It's can we talk? I think there's a lot of misunderstanding maybe about what that means, and it's a pretty simple concept, really.
It is. It's recognizing it's you know, you might say ideally we don't need there wouldn't be anybody addicted, so then there wouldn't be any need for a medication that would help help stabilize a person who is addicted to opiates. But we don't live in that ideal world. We have many, many, many people addicted, and one of the things that's striking to me is how much it's in the news these days, the opiate issue. And so harm reduction is just a way to mitigate the ills of whatever, and it's not just confined to addiction treatment, or it's harm reduction is something you can see wherever there is a problem that you can't maybe fully address and eliminate, but at least you can reduce the harm done by it.
And don't some of these drugs help with the cravings that a person has?
Yes, that's exactly what they do. That so if a person's on Suboxone, an earlier version of a medication assisted treatment was methadone. And that's still used, but I think Suboxone is the next generation of a medication treatment for opiate addiction, and that's seeing very good results.
And you also mentioned Vivitrol.
And Vivitrol is that's in some cases preferable because that's an injection that's done only maybe biweekly or even monthly. So. You know, it's not, you don't need as regular a dosage.
And that is progress because that's an entirely different way about thinking about and dealing with recovery from an addiction. You know, there are those who say, well, it's all a matter of willpower. But when we're talking about a brain disease and different ways of treatment,
right. Yeah.
This is perfectly valid.
Exactly. And, I mean, it's controversial because there are some who are purists and even, say, in the 12-step world, some people don't agree with any kind of medication that would be mind-altering, which, you know, Suboxone is a derivative. It's an opiate in itself, so there are some who don't agree with that. Even some cities are now introducing safe injection sites. So that's used to reduce the risk of spreading disease, HIV, or other diseases through shared needles. So
that was the conference that we went to that the Department of Health had, that there were, I think, 7 safe syringe sites in New Jersey, and they want to expand that.
Yeah,
not the same as safe injection sites, but safe needles and to reduce Hep C and AIDS and everything else.
And one of the takeaways for me from that workshop was that the sites are actually all about respect for the individual. And it may include something like a washing machine to get some clean clothes or bottled water. And that's all part of harm reduction and just taking care of each other and respecting each other.
That's interesting because I want to talk also about, so go back to High Point a little bit in our discharge work, and that we make sure that a person coming out has some of the basic needs. Now, in that case, I don't know that I would classify it as harm reduction. In that case, it's, you know, we want to make sure a person has maybe a counselor set up, an outside counselor. If they're on a medication, that we have an outside prescriber for them. Before they leave, we ask them to co-facilitate a group. I just learned that. I didn't know it was such a regular practice, but I think that's a very good thing. And they talk about... like the strengths or what they've learned in the groups at High Point and how they've benefited from that and gained strength. And that's all part of building self-confidence and self-sufficiency, so when they leave us, they're ready. But going back to your point about, say, a washing machine, that's a basic thing. You know, we need to get our clothes clean. We need to have a stable environment. And if that's lacking coming out of treatment, that's going to create a greater potential for a relapse.
Right. But I love that idea of co-facilitating a meeting before they leave.
That's, I do too. Mm-hmm.
That's really amazing.
Mm-hmm. It's very good.
And also, all of those things support recovery, and that's the bottom line. Are these things that we can help these individuals support recovery, as opposed to enabling a relapse?
Mm-hmm.
And you and I have spoken a little bit about relapse, even the term relapse.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, why don't we talk about that a little bit?
Yeah, I'd like that because I was thinking about that after our conversation, and we always emphasize, as you said, addiction is a brain disease. We want to talk about it in a health context, not a punitive context, which has been how it's been dealt with for a long time. And we know that the war on drugs has certainly not been a success, to understate it. So in talking about addiction as a disease, we often liken it to, say, diabetes or another chronic condition. So there is, with a disease such as diabetes, as with addiction, you need to have everything, there's a medication component, there's a behavioral component, there's a dietary, there's exercise and weight and so forth. So that's, in terms of talking about relapse, there is the potential for it, but the more of those elements that you put in place, especially with a person coming out of recovery, to give them a stable life, you'll decrease the likelihood of that.
Absolutely.
You're really setting them up for success.
Yeah.
Well, what do you see then hand in hand with this? What are the biggest challenges in the recovery world right now? And where do you see the most work that still needs to be done? Where to start?
I'm going to... our program director, Anna, gave me a couple of things I want to not forget to mention. So in terms of treatment, and this is, like we were talking about this before the program got underway, the need for prescribers, outside prescribers. Mm-hmm. Also, how few detoxes we have in the state, and just access to treatment overall. If you have very good private insurance, maybe you'll be okay, but you still may not get the amount of treatment that's needed, I think.
I think that's true, and if you're relying only on insurance,
yeah.
If you don't have the means to pay otherwise, you are very limited.
Right.
Mm-hmm. And we're very fortunate to have you here in Flemington because... As you said, we don't have a detox in Flemington.
Right.
In Hunterdon County for
so
opioids.
Can we talk about what exactly is a detox?
Good point.
We know we have the program at the hospital for mm-hmm. overdoses, but, yeah.
So a detox is basically the first stage of getting someone on the road to recovery. The very earliest thing you do is get the toxins out of their system, whether they're whatever their drug of choice is. They'll go through a period of it can vary, but 4, 5, 6, 7 days of weaning them from the drug so that they can begin to have their head clear and you can begin a conversation, which it's going to be a very long conversation. That'll be their treatment and working towards their recovery.
And, of course, sometimes they will go through a detox program and then have no bed for a residential treatment
or an IOP, an outpatient program.
Yes, either way. And
right. So I want to be clear that High Point, we are not a detox.
Right.
So, but
well, actually, that's what you said. We don't have detox
we
programs
We do not have a
in
detox
Flemington.
In Hunterdon. Mm-hmm. So people go outside of the county. They go through detox, right. And then they come to you. I assume they start at partial care, which is the highest level.
Many would start at partial care, but it is done. You know, when I would emphasize we do a good job of getting people in. There's really not a waiting list, which is a very excellent thing. We can get people in within a few days usually, and we just. Right. So if they're coming to us from, we'll get their records from if they're from a detox or an inpatient program, and yes, they'll be in a partial care for the first could be couple of months before they're stepped down to a IOP level. Again, it's done definitely case by case on a case by case basis. It's important to take each case as an individual. Some people are going to need more extended care. Some people don't need residential care. I think, again, if you have a very serious addiction, probably a residential stint is going to be required, but individuals will vary.
That's true. It's the spectrum of care that is available. Mm-hmm. Where would you say most of the clients come from?
Well, for us, as I said, we have a great many. The lion's share of our clients are Medicaid individuals, and we have quite a reach into the northern part of our state, going up into Sussex County, Essex County, into Morris County. I would say there's no real concentration. I mean, yes, cities will probably see a lot, but there's a lot of problems in rural areas as well, and suburban. That's a mantra that Rocky and I would have used going way back in our advocacy days, talking about addiction doesn't know any boundaries, whether socioeconomic, racial, or what have you, religious. It can come into any environment, and with the opiate crisis, it's hard to say any good has come of the opiate crisis because of so many people lost, but it's illustrated that fact about addiction. So many people from areas that are not stereotypically thought to be ones that are going to be afflicted widely, at least by addiction, in fact, have been.
Right. And you mentioned earlier, too, that you provide transportation for your clients. So you're going all the way over to Morris and up to Sussex.
Yeah, we do go. I'm going to visit a couple of places on Monday into Cranford. And I've had a nice drive up to Blairstown. One of our residents is up there. Some of these are for our mental health clients who are housed in, an Easter Seals or Alternatives, which are housing programs for.
Can I just give a shout out to High Point for how remarkable you handle co-occurring disorders?
Thank you very much. Anna would have my head if I didn't if I didn't mention co-occurring disorders, which of course are a large share of people with a drug addiction. They may have started self-medicating because of a depression or another type of mental illness, and thank you for saying that because we focus on that a great deal, and it's critical that if you're treating addiction that you look at the mental health side of it as well. It's a major part of the problem.
So Dan, you started to talk or you mentioned that. Across the board, doesn't matter how much money you have or education or where you live, everybody's susceptible to substance use disorder. And the effect of the opioid crisis has been just huge on this country. Mm-hmm. Do you want to talk a little bit about how the epidemic has affected families, including families here in Hunterdon County?
The opiate crisis, like any form of addiction, addiction really, anyone who's been through it knows well that it affects not just the person with the addiction. It just throws the whole family into utter chaos. People understandably have that they don't know what to do when they're confronted by this, and somebody who they knew to be a stable, reasonable person is becomes something that's anything but those things, and it turns into someone they really don't know, and will resort to almost anything to be able to get their hands on the drug that they need. Families in our county and throughout the state and country are affected terribly by this. It's so important that people understand that, and they reach out to programs like yours, prevention resources that assist family members with this problem, because no family is equipped to deal with it without expertise.
And I have to say, there's an increase in family support programs meetings as mm-hmm. a result of the mm-hmm. opioid crisis.
Right. I mean, I guess, you know, so an early one, there's Al-Anon, which is a long-standing 12-step-based one that helps family mm-hmm. members. But, yes, there are many more. So that's another advancement that we've seen is there are many ways into recovery, and there are many, you know, any different pathways into recovery. Yeah. Not just relying on 12-step programs, which are wonderful, but they're not for everyone. And likewise, in supporting families, there are different ways that they can find that support.
Exactly, it does.
And we at High Point, we where appropriate, we want to work with family members so that they, when the person comes out, they know what to expect. I think if you've experienced addiction, what we might like to have happen is it's like you're done. Once the treatment is over, you're turning a page, and that's the end of it. Yeah. But that is not the case. It's really a lifelong proposition, and families might not welcome that news at first, but it's better that they accept that. I don't mean that the active addiction is going on, but that the person needs to change and their environment needs to change to provide the stability that we talked about.
Right. So my personal philosophy is that the family is the patient and the disease is substance use disorder. And September being recovery month, I think about families in recovery, not just individuals.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So we're going to take a break right now, Dan. That's okay, Rocky. We'll be right back.
I'm Andy Ross. I'm chairman of the Ambassadors Committee of the Chamber. As members of the Ambassadors Committee, we contact new and renewing members of the Chamber to get their feedback on their Chamber experience and make them feel more at home with the Chamber.
Hunter Chamber of Commerce, building business, one business at a time.
Hunterdon Medical Center was started by families for families. Inside our circle of care, we offer coordinated care for your entire family, led by our outstanding family medicine physicians and specialists. Hunterdon Healthcare, your full circle of care. If you need a physician, call Hunterdon Medical Center's Physician Referral Service at 1-800-511-4-HMC or visit us on the web at www.hunterdonhealthcare.org.
Everybody over there!
Get on up!
Everybody right there!
Get into it!
Everybody right there!
Get involved!
Everybody, you!
Did you know? The Hunterdon County Chamber of Commerce has over 20 active committees that you can participate in. Committees range from focus on business and government to economic development to events like our annual business expo. Contact the Chamber for more information today at 908-782-7115 or email us at info@hunterdon-chamber.org. The Hunterdon County Chamber of Commerce, the voice of business.
Welcome back to Sharing the Hope. My name is Rocky, and I am your co-host with Jennifer Denlinger, and we are having a wonderful conversation with Dan Mira from High Point here in Flemington. We were just speaking about family groups, and I'm going to plug a little commercial for our family group that meets in Flemington the first and third Wednesday evening of every month. We also have an open house coming up October 2nd, and we will be posting something on the Facebook page at 5:30. all are welcome to come see what this family support is all about, what we have to offer.
Including you, Dan.
Including you,
sending an invitation to High Point.
I'll look forward to it.
And all family members of loved ones struggling with a substance use disorder are welcome to attend. I also want to mention, a couple weeks ago, we had Morgan and Marielle on to talk about the New Jersey Coalition for Addiction Recovery Support Conference. And we are talking also about recovery support today. So I want to throw out the commercial for the Recovery Ecosystems Conference, September 28th at TCNJ. I did just share that on the page. Also, Prevention Resources has a professional fall conference every year. It's really good. October 25th at Raritan Valley Community College from 8 to 3. I will also put the link. We have great speakers lined up, which I won't take the time right now to mention. But for people also that need continuing ed credits, that's available in addition with breakfast and lunch.
It's a big day.
It's a big day, yes.
Sounds good.
Back to you, Dan.
Okay, so let's talk about supports in recovery, the importance of supports. You mentioned having a plan when somebody is ready to leave treatment and the different components of that.
Right. So people coming out of recovery, you know, it's wonderful, and they've made a lot of progress, but this is the first time that they'll be really – that they're on their own in a way, that they don't have the anchor of their treatment program that they're going to every day, or if they're residential, then they're living there. So recovery supports are so critical. I know that you at Prevention Resources have taken it upon yourselves to operate one without any funding, outside funding, to provide that a couple. I believe it's two nights.
Recovery Center.
Let's do a shout out for the Recovery
Yay.
Center.
Let's do that.
It's Wednesday and Saturday afternoons from 5 o'clock to 9:30 or mm-hmm. so at night, and the Recovery Center is at 87 Park Avenue here in mm-hmm. Flemington.
And they do a lot of fun events too, which I think is important to mention. Learn how to enjoy life and have fun in recovery.
How to have fun.
I think they have a
sober.
Haunted house thing coming up for Halloween.
They've gone camping. Mm-hmm. They go to the movies. They do a lot of fun things. And they also have AA meetings there.
That's having fun. And that's at some point in a person coming out of addiction, it's a revelation that they can have fun without their drug of choice. That might sound preposterous to somebody who is unacquainted with addiction, but it is true. It's in a way, and it's also terrifying to them, which is when the need for recovery support, a recovery center, to provide an anchor, a place where they can go, socialize, enjoy themselves, and begin to see what their life is without using drugs and also, perhaps access supports if they need some guidance around, say, employment or education, mm-hmm. or maybe with a family or health related, all of those things that are vital to anyone's life. It's really essential to somebody in early recovery that stability exists, and they can find that at a recovery center or in recovery supports. There are only a handful of them, state-funded ones at least, in New Jersey, and then there are a smattering of others that are privately done, and then one like then yours are just out of the, the goodness.
Trying to fill a need.
Yeah, trying to fill a need. But
I would probably be remiss if I didn't mention the Facebook page, too. It's the Recovery Center of Hunterdon.
Mm-hmm.
And anybody interested can go to the Facebook page and see what they're up to, see what activities are
coming
out.
And what's nice is they share the space with the Harvest Family Success Center, and there are staff members there that are so connected with social services
right.
and that can help mm-hmm. connect someone to those services that you don't even know what to ask for.
Right.
There's emergency assistance, help find housing.
Yes.
Maybe get them health care.
Mm-hmm. All of those things. Are vital, and particularly as someone, and they may have a criminal record,
mm-hmm.
So that can present some extra strain and challenges, but we're doing a little bit better in that regard. People coming out of drug court say can get employment and perhaps have their records expunged. So
it's getting a little better.
A little better, which is, yes.
Well, speaking of getting better, another trend I think in recovery is the peer-to-peer coaching.
Mm-hmm. Peer-to-peer is something another thing that I deeply believe in, and I've seen it work. And I just it just makes perfect sense that if there's someone who has the experience, who can speak from experience, and that somebody who's been through addiction, they know the challenges. They know maybe what's scary for somebody in early recovery. So I think that the coaching program, I may have to ask you to fill in a little bit, because I do know that we have some training around peer-to-peer mm-hmm. coaching.
We happen to be...
Want to take this one, Rocky?
Sure. So Jennifer and I are starting on Monday for the peer recovery specialist training. Mm-hmm.
As family peers.
As family peers, yes. So we start on Monday, 3 days next week, 2 days mm-hmm. the following week. Mm-hmm. There's some other training that's been behind it. I think one of the most beautiful things is it also is a beacon of hope, right?
Mm-hmm.
Not only is it there that identification,
absolutely.
But also that it is
yes.
hopeful.
Yes, exactly. That people, again, who are new to recovery and are feeling a little, maybe a little bit worried about how they're going to make it, but then they see somebody who's in stable, long-term recovery, and yeah, absolutely, is that beacon, mm-hmm. that is the example of what life holds.
It's always good to buddy up.
Absolutely.
Right?
Mm-hmm.
Rocky, buddy. So we've talked about treatment options, and we've talked about recovery. How about if we back up a little bit and talk about prevention?
Right.
Can you specifically, let's start with ESPERT, and let's explain that, yet another acronym.
Okay, so I appreciate you bringing that up, and it is something that I've been doing some side work on recently. So ESPERT is an acronym which stands for Screening, Brief Intervention, and Referral to Treatment. So three elements to it. The screening is a series of questions which we'd like to see ESPERT introduced in all our schools and have all students go through this. So again, the screening is just a series of questions which may indicate that a problem exists, or at least a budding problem. With it could be drug use, and there also have been inroads around mental health issues, because we've seen sadly a real increase in youth self harm and suicide. So that's been incorporated into the screening program. If a problem is found or to be in the early stages, ideally, then then a brief intervention is done, which is motivational interviewing or just a conversation with with a trained individual, a counselor, to try to encourage the person to see that this could become a worse problem, and they don't really want to go down that road. And for a small percentage, if the problem is advanced enough, then there would be a referral to treatment.
And you mentioned motivational interviewing. That's another thing we kind of throw around.
Mm-hmm.
So
motivational interviewing is, and it's something that we, it's among our groups at High Point. It's a way of helping a person decide really for themselves that they want to make a change. I think it's human nature not to want to be told we need to do something. So motivational interviewing has been around for quite some time. I'm certainly no expert in it, but I fully embrace the idea of it, because it encourages people to understand that they probably do want to make this change for themselves, and rather than have it dictated to them. And that harks back a little bit to the peer to peer. It's rather than if sometimes when you have a person in authority talking to you, and even if they're not telling you, just by virtue of their position, it seems like they're telling you what to do. So,
well, we also even try to do some educating about motivational interviewing in our family groups,
mm-hmm.
And with our family member clients, because finding new ways to communicate with their loved ones as parents. Sometimes we get into the lecture mode or mm-hmm. fear. We're in the high decibel method of parenting and
pleading.
You know, lots of ineffective ways of communicating.
Right.
And motivational interviewing is, it has been around a while, and it is common to us who are in the field, but mm-hmm. not everybody. That's part of our job, is teaching people how to communicate.
Yeah, that's
differently.
A good, the way you describe that as a parent and starting to get to the point where, and the volume goes up, and then, but the result is not going to be what you hope.
Well, the walls go up for the person that yeah. is receiving the message.
Yeah.
You're not getting anywhere.
Absolutely.
And somebody who's using is isolating naturally anyway mm-hmm. and just doesn't have room in their head
mm-hmm.
for mom or dad. So,
can I just ask one more question about ESPRT?
Please do, yes.
So what age group are we talking about?
So the initiative, and there is a bill before the state legislature on this, so we're looking at high school. And I wouldn't mind if it were a little younger than that, because we know kids are definitely getting into substance use earlier. But I think the feeling was that if we started any earlier, there would be greater resistance to as it may be an intrusion into a child's life, and that the parents think that that's their domain and they don't want to anyone else doing that. But sometimes you know, kids are not going to be forthcoming with their parents, of course, and so the hope is that with this screening they might be forthcoming and just tip their hand a little bit. There's a program in Georgia, I think a lot of times kids are really, they want to talk about it. If they're in the midst of a problem, or they part of them at least wants to come, they want to come clean. They want to say this is not where I want to go. And ESPRT affords them the opportunity to be asked a question they really want to be asked in the first place.
That's great.
Yeah.
That's important.
Very helpful.
So I started to mention there's a program, the ESPRT initiative in Georgia is called Somebody Finally Asked, and
oh,
I love
wow.
that. So that's, I think an earlier iteration of it was if only somebody had asked. And I was at a forum on this, and somebody else that used that exact language, not even knowing about the Georgia program.
Wow.
That's beautiful.
Mm-hmm.
That is.
Yeah, it is.
Well, how about we shift gears for a minute? So I know you have some creative therapies at High Point.
Mm-hmm.
You want to talk about those? Those are fun topics.
Yeah, so talk about, you know, we have to, the therapy is very important, but and sometimes very serious, and mm-hmm. but we try to find room, and we do, for some fun stuff. So we've had pet therapy for a long time, and that's pretty common in the treatment realm. Oftentimes, it'll be a dog, and I love dearly. I'm not going to miss the opportunity to mention my dog Patrick, who's my therapist.
We have dogs too.
We have dogs in our office.
But we did something a little bit different at High Point. By one of our counselors is a real animal lover, and apparently of all sorts of animals, and she arranged to have the Snake Man of New Jersey come in
Ugh.
And bring some these. They're all constrictors.
Boy!
I know. Was that was the view of some of the counselors, but the clients loved it. A lot of the clients loved it, and they were more than willing to not only touch the snakes but actually drape the snakes over their shoulders, and they were fascinated and intrigued. And delighted, and so that he's been back a couple times, and I actually it was so well liked by the clients, I put them in touch with one of High Point has three sister agencies around the state. They're called Unity Place, and so I referred the Snake Man to our Unity Place of Monmouth County, and they made a visit down there. Not him personally, but his assistant, who's been with us. Her name is Eliza, and we're very appreciative of that. Another thing we've done is self-care day, and that was another thing that was really well received. It was wonderful. It included yoga. It included impromptu salon where we had somebody doing nails and we had somebody come in and do hair. Anna, our director, was giving hand massages. Other counselors were helping out with the doing nails. We had Zufall Health is a partner of ours, and they're a wonderful organization in this part of the state that provide all array of health care services to people without insurance or very, very underinsured, and including dental care, but and some primary care and specialty medical services. So they had representatives there. I want to make sure we do. I mentioned that through Zufall we do HIV education and testing done regularly. That's something I think we're going to do before Recovery Month is out. We may have them back for another round of HIV education and testing. That's not in the fun realm, but mm-hmm. it's something very important, of course.
Self-care. Yes. And these are things that are offered to your clients. These are not opened this self-care day to the greater community.
No.
Are you interested?
Yes, I want to go. I don't really want to see the snakes, but.
I think it's fabulous, though.
Yeah.
I mean, it's really thinking out of the box.
And we do a great job of that. I'll mention Sarah, who was on the Health Matters radio program with me a couple of months ago, and she's very creative and imaginative and comes up with some of this. But everybody there is interested in, you know, we want to make it fun where possible.
Well, you know,
for the clients.
Dan, when you mentioned learning to have fun when you're sober, mm-hmm. that really is serious business. That is a very real goal.
Yeah.
And to be able to take time out and learn about self-care and learn to do fun things together, there's no price tag on that. Those are really important.
No, that's critical. It's really where it maybe removes some of the fear and uncertainty about what life's going to be like. Again, people who don't understand addiction maybe can't imagine, you know, how can people not understand the wonders that life holds? But anybody who's seen addiction up close knows that is the case. That there's one thing and one thing only that makes life worth living. Or at least that's what they think while in the grips of addiction.
Right.
I'll share just from the perspective of a person in recovery. When you start using at a young age, especially that age where mm-hmm. you're supposed to learn to socialize, I'm talking about middle school years,
mm-hmm.
Even high school years, where you're supposed to learn how to go to parties and how to chit-chat with people and how to dance.
Yes.
If you start using a substance to help you get through that, then you've never learned. So it really is like being a baby and starting to learn how to crawl all over again.
That's
in a lot of ways.
Yeah, exactly right. Yeah, that's very well put. That's what it is.
Should we pause right here?
Sure.
Another round of commercials, and
we'll
be right back.
We'll do a quick one.
Okay. Thanks, Rob.
Don't fear technology. Use it, understand it, and embrace it. The mission of Tech Today is to demystify technology. I'm your host, Chris Bianco, principal of Blue Panther Business Partners. Every Tuesday morning from 10 to 11, we will cover new apps, buying advice, technology news, and answer your questions. Good day, and join me on Tech Today on HuntertonChamberRadio.com.
When it matters most, our award-winning team of emergency physicians and nurses provides sophisticated care 24 hours a day. Superior emergency care at a moment's notice. Hunterdon Healthcare, your full circle of care. When it matters most, our award-winning team of emergency physicians and nurses provides sophisticated care 24 hours a day. Superior emergency care at a moment's notice. Hunterdon Healthcare, your full circle of care.
And welcome back to Sharing the Hope. We are speaking with Dan Mira today from High Point in Flemington. Great program that offers partial care, intensive outpatient care, and outpatient.
So, Dan and Rocky, I have a question for both of you, because I know you go back in your advocacy work. And we all can agree that working on behalf of treatment and recovery, it never seems to be dull. There's always something happening. What have been some of your biggest challenges in the field? And how did you come together working originally?
Well, I met Dan at a New Jersey Parity Coalition meeting, which is we still meet once a month. But I'm going to give Dan an opportunity to share, because he goes way back prior to that when he worked for the National Council of Alcohol and Drug Dependence.
Mm-hmm. So when we probably should define parity, so parity just basically defined means behavioral health issues are receive treatment and are insured on the same basis or the same level on par, hence parity with physical illnesses. Medical, surgical issues. It's a very complicated issue. We recently, just this year, after a 10-year, very intensive effort, got parity passed in New Jersey, which is a major, major victory. And talk about the importance of success stories. It's important that we tell those success stories individually when we're offering the example of a peer who's in recovery as an example of a success to somebody in earlier recovery. Well, that for advocates, the idea of having gotten parity through after a lot of effort is a true success story and is very important to people, families in our state who have someone with a mental health or addiction issue and need treatment and maybe. And I think Rocky, I know, can talk very poignantly about this, a family who's struggled to get have their insurer pay for care.
I think what was also important is that we had providers, treatment providers, that were part of the coalition mm-hmm. because they spend so much time trying to get another day paid for by the insurance company.
Right.
Another day paid for. And they have staff, people that do nothing but try to work with someone, in a queue at an insurance company, try to convince them that this person needs more treatment.
Right.
And that was very important to have their perspective also.
And also working on behalf of family members who are completely exhausted
mm-hmm.
and not really able to speak up on their own behalf and for the loved one's behalf.
Mm-hmm.
To have the two of you working tirelessly, advocating for parity, I know is appreciated by many, many people.
Thank you.
So
what was exciting is how Governor Murphy and when he signed the bill, that he did it in the hospital
mm-hmm.
lobby.
That's right.
In Trenton, and I think he sent the message that this is truly a medical issue. This is a public health issue.
That was really exactly the right setting, right? That was throughout that advocacy effort and throughout the advocacy that continues, which definitely is needed, that we continue to stress that addiction and mental health are health issues. And
now somehow we need to enforce this, right?
That's why we still meet monthly.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
We need the Department of Banking and Insurance to enforce this. So we actually have a meeting again next week or the following week. We will continue. We're not giving up.
Mm-hmm.
There's a lot of work left to be done, and the coalition will continue to do other work. What else have you been involved in?
Advocacy-wise, so I'm a little bit removed from that now that I'm doing marketing for High Point. Recovery, again, to hark back, recovery centers. I would like to. So New Jersey has one. We've a state-funded one in Patterson, which is an excellent one. A good friend of ours, I think Mike Santello, is a former director there. He's now elsewhere, but there's one down in Voorhees. I definitely have worked on that issue and would like to continue to work on that issue. Harm reduction overall, I'm a big believer in, and would like to see that advanced as well. Maybe even safe injection sites.
Can you explain? Because I think what a true Eva's Village. I assume that's what you're talking about.
In yes.
Mm-hmm. What they do with that? What they call a recovery center? Because there's so much there.
There is so much, and I probably know half of it, but it's some of the things we've talked about in terms of so it creates an environment for socializing, which that's very important, but it also helps connect people to, again, different a network of services, whatever their needs might be. Whether it's family counseling, whether it's education, they want to continue their education or get their GED. Maybe they have some legal issues they need to work through. A recovery center can do that. And one thing I love about. And I first heard about this at Eva's Village, but I think it's existed elsewhere, is when a person comes in, they're asked, okay, what are five things that you need? But they also ask, what are five things that you bring to us? And that's all part. That's such a critical thing because people have lost sight of their own gifts in addiction. So I'm glad I remembered to say that because I love that model and that practice.
I love that too.
I love that.
That's really good.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So the recovery centers really help to strengthen the. Broadly speaking, they bring strength to the individual through the group, through the center, and maybe through people who are in a little bit more stable recovery than them.
They even have a dental clinic there,
yeah.
And they have dentists come in.
Yeah.
And where is Eva's place?
It's in Patterson.
Oh, okay,
mm-hmm. Yeah.
That's what you were talking about.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So looking forward, what's one thing that everybody can do to contribute to help the recovery community?
Well, so we're in Recovery Month, which really started, of course, because of the stigma facing addiction and the resistance to the idea of it as a health problem, because the recovery movement goes back to the early 2000s. So really to continue to emphasize that is important. There is still a lot of stigma which frustrates treatment and makes people afraid to seek treatment or disinclined to seek treatment because they don't want to, you know, they don't want to face that black mark or that red letter, that scarlet letter.
Mm, right. That's what we try to do with our clients too, is provide a safe space for people to talk about what's going on in their lives. They may not have anybody else they can talk to.
Mm-hmm.
But for us to normalize the conversation in the hopes that people will reach out for help. And I know, Dan, you and I were talking about empowering people through language also.
Right.
And we've had many conversations about positive language mm-hmm. instead of stigmatizing language. Yeah.
Yeah, national advocacy organization, Faces and Voices of Recovery, I'm not sure where they are right now, but they developed a whole, videos and a whole regime of using language, using positive language and what recovery means. And roughly, I'm in recovery for X number of months or years, which means I haven't used drugs or alcohol. So the emphasis is on the recovery, not the addiction. So that's really maybe that's something. And that, to be honest, there's been an unbelievable amount of news coverage with this opiate crisis, and that's to the good, because it is bringing addiction front and center. But I have not heard as much, even during Recovery Month, talk about recovery, which it's important to talk about the successes.
It certainly is. And we are almost out of time, believe
it
or not.
This happens every week.
So I'm going to ask Dan one last question. And just wondering, what has brought you your greatest satisfaction in this line of work?
Well, I'm going to give a couple answers. One thing I really love is that and this differs from the advocacy work that I did at NCADD for many years, and I truly loved that deeply, and I love the writing of that and working on that journal. But I like coming into High Point, and the clients are there, and I get to see them, and I get to see many of them progress and get to know them a little bit. It was one thing missing in my advocacy work with NCAD, because I wasn't really not that I'm doing direct service, but I'm in that environment, so I get to see the fruits of that excellent work that's done at High Point.
That's beautiful. Thank you for sharing the hope with us today, Dan. It's really a pleasure having you here today.
Pleasure to be here. Thanks for having me.
So how does someone reach out to you, to High Point?
Okay. Thank you for asking. So you can, if you want to find out about our program, we've got a good website that's just highpointpartialcare.com. That's all one word, highpointpartialcare.com. Or give us a call, and you can ask for me. That's 908-788-5979. And ask for me, Dan Mira, by name, and I'll be glad to speak with you.
Thank you, Dan.
Thank you so much, Dan.
Thank you.
Thank you.
So we will be here next Thursday. You will be here next Thursday.
I will.
At 5 o'clock. And any teaser about who we're in?
I think we might be talking about trauma.
About trauma. Okay. You can look us up on your Facebook page, Sharing the Hope, see the streaming of the show. If you like the show, it helps spread the word to help others. Thank you so much, Dan, for spending time with us today.
Thank you.
And like Jenny said, for sharing the hope.
Glad to do it.
Are you looking to get your message in front of a qualified audience through all the noise out there today? Consider taking an advertisement out on Hunterdon Chamber Radio, WHCR-DB, the voice of business. Contact the Chamber today at 908-782-7115 or give us an email at info@hunterdon-chamber.org.
To 40 pounds in 40 days guaranteed. This is not a crazy diet or exercise program. No drugs, hormones, or shots. You can lose 20 to 45 pounds in 40 days with Nutrimost resonant frequency technology to measure 2,800 of your body's key biomarkers. Using NRF, they can find and correct the cause of your weight problem by measuring factors affecting weight gain, including metabolism, fat burning, fat storage, appetite, detoxification, and hormonal regulation. It's safe, fast, easy, and effective, and you won't walk around hungry or have cravings. It's even doctor supervised. Schedule a body composition analysis and consultation. You can be transformed in 40 days guaranteed. This is a limited time offer, so they can't wait to see you look great.
So call 888-718-7077. That's 888-718-7077. Or visit njthin.com. That's njthin.com.
All right, welcome back to Good Morning Hunter and Hunchiver.com. Freeholder Rob Walton is in the house, and we're going to talk with him about a whole bunch of things going on in Hunter County. So we got plenty of time. Well, hopefully we have plenty of time to do it. I appreciate you coming on, Freeholder Walton, and appreciate you coming in to talk some really tough issues today. So good morning.
Good morning. No, glad always glad to come in and speak on the issues.
Good.
Never been shy about speaking my mind. As I'm sure
that has been apparent, and I've seen it in the notes, in the meeting notes with the freeholders. So just to be transparent here, you are not up for election this year, right?
No, I am not.
Okay, so we're not on the stump. We're just frustrated with the world of Hunterdon County. So let's